Hello and welcome to the audio choke here at MMATorch.com. Thanks for joining us again for a brand new week. Hopefully everything's going fantastically with you because it's not going so well for other people. Wink. I don't know where I was really going with that, but at least it's over now.
Yeah, I'm Greg Rowland.
I'm Tobin Shelby. Were you making fun of the Gulf Coast? What was
yes.
that?
I thought he was making fun of Chuck Liddell.
Oh, no. Yeah. Maybe later.
In his defense, I can't take a punch from Rich Franklin either.
Have you ever tried?
I'm really sure I can't.
Well, I'm Matt Collins, and I will. For $50.
Oh, I think Chuck got like a million for it, so you're getting...
That's
yeah,
a good
you're getting
deal.
Shafted, yeah. Matt. You're going to have to get a new agent.
Yeah, all right. So, what are we up to?
I think we're just going to make jokes about the UFC.
Sure, we could do that.
115.
Right. Or we could actually talk about it.
I was trying to... Yeah.
You getting your zen on over there, Matt? What's going
on? No, I was trying to think of, like, UFC, like, ultimately, effing Chuck or something like that. I don't know. See, that's why I didn't say anything to begin with.
Yeah,
that's
probably a good call.
It's looking like I was thinking about something. But UFC 15 over the weekend? Guess we can run down.
Yeah.
You're about 100 off.
We should start cycling through then again, though, really. And I think the numbers at this point are kind of silly. But at the same time, what else are you going to do? Because they're also running out of verbs. Or adjectives.
Yeah,
so...
Well, the fistinine.
They really kind of stopped that a long time ago. I mean, they used to always have, like, you know, a name just like...
Bad intentions.
Yeah.
Bedlam.
Or sometimes it would have something to do with a fighter's name, like, you know, Chuck Liddell's fighting, so we're going to call it Meltdown or Freeze Over, and, you know, stuff like that. And now it's just, you know... Liddell versus Franklin, stuff like that.
And that's what I prefer. Like, just get rid of the numbers and just have it the title be the main event. Like, I'm fine with that. Because I think the numbers at one point are going to get ridiculous.
Well, when we get to 213, you know, what's the point?
Well, I mean, I guess...
213 being the magic number, of course. I can stand it all the way up to 213, but as soon as that happens, I'm out.
So 212 is fine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it does kind of give you the sense of the chronological order,
But does it, though? Like, it hasn't been around that long, and there's this huge number. So, like, by the time mixed martial arts has been around for 30 years, you know, it doesn't give us a good timeline of the history of the sport and how long it's been around.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying, like, for example, UFC 115 could very well be historic in that it's the last fight of Chuck Liddell. So he had his first fight at, what, UFC 13? Mm-hmm. So, you know, Chuck Liddell's career spans from UFC 13 to UFC 115, and he's, you know, in so many UFCs in between.
Yeah, for note-taking purposes, I think it is useful, but just, like, speaking personally as a fan, I'm just kind of like, it's kind of, I just think it's silly. But, of course, there's always reasons for it, but, yeah, I just much prefer the name of the fighter versus fighter. For the title, but yeah, certainly the numbers have their uses.
It'll be good for bookkeeping and stuff like that, but I don't think it has to be the vocal point of every pay-per-view or UFC event.
No, certainly in the case of UFC 100, for example, like that was a big deal because it was the 100th UFC. But, you know, I'm no more excited to see UFC 116 because it's UFC 116 than UFC 115 because it's UFC 115. It's the fights that make the card.
Yeah.
So on that note, what do we think of the card? I mean, there wasn't a lot of hype into this UFC 115 going in. I think a lot of that had to do with Chuck Liddell and Rich Franklin being in the main event. And, you know, despite what people's feelings towards those fighters might be, they're not in the primes of their careers anymore. Chuck Liddell especially, you know, he's not look great in his last several, like, five or six fights. And once again, kind of proved his chins really, really failed him at this point in his career. And Rich Franklin is on the, we talked about this on our last podcast, in the later phases of his career, but hasn't faded nearly as much as Chuck. But they're still not considered, you know, top contenders in their division. So it wasn't necessarily considered a home run main event card. But overall, you know, just, you know,
the prelims got a lot of buzz with the hardcore fans.
Yeah, and overall,
prelims.
Top to bottom, it was a very, very solid card, a good night of fights. There was a few kind of like one or two decisions that were just kind of, you know, plodding, and then there was a couple controversial calls. But overall, I mean, the quality of fights on this card was really, really good.
Yeah, particularly in the controversial calls, the Mac Danzig-Matt Wyman fight.
Oops.
Yeah. Matt Wyman had Mac Danzig in a chokehold and informed the referee that Mac Danzig was in fact asleep. And,
I think he's out, something along those lines. Yeah.
Yeah, and the ref stopped the fight, and Mac Danzig was wide awake.
Yeah, the problem was there. It was Eve Levine, and I was talking to some friends when we were watching, because that was one of the prelim fights that they ended up showing. I believe it was on Spike or something like that.
That was before the pay-per-view started.
But I didn't watch the prelims until after the pay-per-view was over. I just had a DVR and watched the Spike prelims earlier. But, you know, during the pay-per-view, anytime Eve Levine was reffing a fight, he'd get booed.
Yeah.
When they introduced him. And I was talking to my friends how fun it is to try and, like, that's part of the entertaining aspect of MMA for me that's not related to the sport itself, is just trying to figure out, like, well, what did Eve Levine do? And I said, he must have made a bad call earlier. It's the same type of games I get into with my friends during an event, like when we see a bunch of blood on the mat but haven't seen a really bloody fight yet.
Yeah.
I'd be like, okay, well, when in the event did this happen? Are we going to see this prelim? So I was kind of glad that we did find out why Eve Levine was getting booed throughout the rest of the night. But yeah, it was he even checked Mac Danzig's hand really fast. But, like, it was really, it wasn't like pick it up and drop it. He was just like, oh, he's out. It's over. And then Mac Danzig was like, yeah, no.
Not sleeping yet.
But they were all, Mac Danzig was really gracious. He was not like, man, F Eve Levine. He was like, hey, it's a hard job. So he kind of, and I'm sure he's upset about it.
Yeah, but what are you going to do?
Right, exactly. Hopefully it'll give him a rematch. And, you know, it was a blown call by Eve Levine, simple as that. At the same time, just the way Mac Danzig was positioned, you couldn't see his face. You could tell that his neck was not fully, like, caught up in, I think it was a guillotine, caught up in the guillotine. But at the same time, you know, I could see in the split-second decision-making that comes with refereeing how Eve Levine made that decision, even though it was wrong. Because, like, you just kind of look, you can't see Mac Danzig's face. He wasn't responding. It was because he was, I think what he said, he was trying to post up on a leg. But he wasn't, like, he didn't look like he was into it. Again, that's the ref's job to determine, and he should have taken more time to determine that he was, in fact, still, you know, awake.
Yeah, I think this is one of the calls, and I think Mac Danzig probably agrees with me, which is why he, you know, has been so nice about it. This is one of the calls where you don't want to so much blame the referee as just, you know, it sucks that it happened, because it's the kind of thing that can happen. But at the same time, you look at it the other way, where what if he was choked unconscious, and what if Eve Levine let it go?
Right.
Then we're talking brain damage. And I'm going to say that, you know, getting the loss that you don't necessarily deserve is better than the other possibility, which is where, you know, you can't talk anymore.
And UFC refs have had a really good track record so far of, you know, good calls.
Well, you know, they make mistakes here and there. I would say they're usually pretty good. There's not a whole lot of, like, majorly blown calls.
Well, except for Dana White hates Steve Mazzagatti. And a quick note, I mean, they're commission refs. They're not UFC refs.
Yeah.
They're state athletic commission refs.
Yeah, I mean, as a general rule, I mean, the guys do good. And as much as Dana White hates Steve Mazzagatti, and I'll say that I don't think he's my favorite ref either.
Right.
But, you know, it's not an easy job. It is the kind of job where you got to make decisions really quickly, and a really quick decision that you make can haunt you for the rest of your career, because people will never forget that decision that you made, because it influenced the fight.
Right, and I think it's true for most sports, but the refs and, you know, even judges in sports that have judges never really get recognized until they make a mistake, which is kind of sad and, you know.
Except Herb Dean and Big John.
Right.
Those guys,
like,
have always kind of gotten some credit.
Yeah, in the UFC and MMA, there's certain, I think it's because they're, I don't know, I was about to say their personalities come through a little bit more, but it's because they actually bring attention to it. Like, they announce who the ref is. Whereas, during the NFL games, or, you know, football, basketball games, like, people who are really paying attention might catch who the refs are, but I don't think they, like, show them on camera and be like, hey, your refs for the evening are.
Yeah.
You know? But, it's a thankless job, really, and certainly there have been some blown calls, and, you know, they deserve scrutiny, and, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's happened before, right. But, I mean, be hard. I think that there's more controversy with the judges more than anything.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, than the refs.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that for, you know, an organized sport, that the refs with UFC, even though they're, you know, not UFC refs,
right,
it seems to work out for the good rather than for the evil most of the time.
Yeah, well, and like I said, it's all about what you consider the priority. If you consider the priority to be the safety, this was a good call.
Yeah.
If you consider the priority to be seeing the way the fight works out, you know, it's maybe not the right call. But I think the safety is the more important of the two factors. Because, I mean, even though it sucks for Mac Danzig, he lost, they, in theory, can fight again and he can right the wrong, as opposed to the other way around where he could, you know, never fight again.
Right, yeah, and it's unfortunate because, again, it was the wrong call. It was obviously the wrong call. It just, you know, I wish Eve Levine had just made that, taken that extra second or two to double check. Because, again, you mentioned the fighter safety, and that's a big part of it. But in this case, I don't think it was like, you know, another second or two was going to be. And again, you, as a ref, you can't necessarily tell in that instance how bad a chokehold is, that sort of thing. But that's kind of part of their job. And yeah, I mean, luckily in this case, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a thing where another second or two would have resulted in some sort of injury or anything like that. But yeah, I think the refs, like you said, I mean, they have the fighter's health and well-being in mind, and sometimes that results in early stoppages or, you know, a call that shouldn't have been made, that sort of thing. And it's unfortunate it happens, and yeah, the best-case scenario is they get a rematch. So.
Now, moving from the ref to the fighter, what's up with Matt Wyman telling the ref that he's out?
Right.
It's pretty hard to choke a guy unconscious and not know. I mean, people go limp pretty quickly, and if Matt Banzig is trying to post up, there's certainly going to be some tension. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's a bitch move by Wyman there.
I don't think it was deliberate. I will stay closer to the tree and not go out on a limb. I think there's another example that very night. I'm struggling for the name right now, but it was another submission. It was a triangle, I believe.
Oh,
was that a
guillotine or
was that the Mike Pyle Jesse Lennox fight? I believe where Mike Pyle got Jesse Lennox in a triangle choke, and the ref didn't jump in and he basically looked over like, hey, he's out. He fell asleep.
Yeah, Mike got in, like, you know, three really good elbows and then just had to spread his arms and say, you know, can I stop? Are we done yet?
So I don't think it was, like, a vicious move on Matt Wyman's part so much as being like, hey, I think he's out. You want to check him? And then it just kind of went downhill from there.
Well, what if that was his strategy? Yeah. You know, what if he could just do that? You know, manipulate the ref like that. That'd be a brilliant move right up there with Koscheck, you know?
Yeah.
And which is the jury's out on that.
Mm. Yeah. Very Machiavellian.
Yes. Yeah. The thinking man's fighter.
Yeah, but I don't think that's the case. I think, again, just unfortunate circumstances. But who knows? That would be.
I just like to theorize. I'm going out on that limb and then just diving right off, you know?
And again, it comes back to the refs. It's, you know, I don't necessarily blame fighters for doing that. Again, not as like a tactic to try to cheat to win, but just like, hey, I don't want to pop this guy's face off. Do you want to make sure he's asleep? Because I think he is. And then it's definitely the ref's job to confirm that. So, but yeah, no, that was kind of weird. But certainly on this card, we had an instance where it was properly called for, where Mike Pyle was like, hey, I'm pretty sure I just choked Jesse Lennox out. You should probably call the fight. And then they came over and checked him. And yeah, so it worked out. One other thing, and this is since we're just talking about, you know, reffing and some interesting calls, might as well keep up on that, but kind of just transition a little bit into judging.
Where are you going with this?
Well, let's see.
It's
the Evan Dunham Tyson Griffin fight, and Evan Dunham rightfully was declared the winner, but they declared him the winner by split decision, which means one judge scored the fight for Tyson Griffin, which is wrong. Like, not even close. Like, no, if you've watched that fight, you know Tyson Griffin did not win the fight. So that was surprising. Like, you could maybe have given him a round or something like that, but it's just one of those things, like, you can't justify giving him the fight. So it's not, like, the biggest ripoff or anything like that, because Evan Dunham still was declared the victor, but it's still going to be, like, you know, people years from now, or, you know, maybe even in a couple, you know, next year or something like that, if Evan Dunham, you know, ends up, you know, becoming a title contender or something like that, and people be looking at his Fight Finder profile or something like that, like, oh, I don't know. I mean, yeah, he's got a victory over Tyson Griffin, but it was a split decision.
Yeah, he barely won.
Right, which is not, if you saw the fight, you know he didn't barely win. He dominated Tyson Griffin. So it was just one of those things. You're like, really? The thing I immediately thought of was BJ Penn's loss to Frankie Edgar, where you can make the argument for BJ Penn losing, but what you can't make the argument for is BJ Penn losing every single round.
Yeah.
And so, like, you're like, okay, I can see the judges giving him this and this and this, but you just can't make that next jump. So it was just a little odd, but again, not the greatest of injustices.
Yeah, well, at least the right guy won.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the important thing. But yeah, judges are crazy, man. I mean, and, you know, it's beaten into the ground. Don't give it to the judges to determine who's going to be the winner.
Which I hate, by the way, but it's unfortunate when it's reinforced like this, because judges sometimes make bad calls.
Now, are these UFC judges, or are they...
They're also state commission judges. The only exception to that is when they're in like England or something. And this was actually in Canada. Mm-hmm. But I believe Canada is also regulated like America. Whenever they go to Canadian states, they've got a similar regulating body. But I'm pretty sure whenever they go to England or Ireland or, you know, anywhere in Europe, they're pretty much on their own to do all this stuff. But they try to keep things to code as good as possible.
Right, yeah. Usually they'll try and bring in some of the same people who've done work before in the States. So, yeah, other than that, from a few kind of controversial issues, I mean, overall, like I said, the top to bottom, this was a really good card. You know, the prelims on Spike were good. You know, the Carlos Condit, Rory McDonald fight, I think, was the one that got fight of the night, and that was a great fight.
That fight also had a little bit of controversy surrounding the ending.
I
tend to agree with what Dana White said, where you know the ref is not looking at the time clock; he's looking at the fight. So just because the guy can probably survive 9 more seconds, that shouldn't be factoring into what the referee is thinking. From a fan's perspective, yeah, that kind of sucks because 9 more seconds and he would have either won or gotten a draw depending on how the judges would have given it to him, whether it would have been a 10-9 round for Condit or a 10-8 round, which would be very possible. But, you know, the ref is not looking at it. The ref is looking at the action, so there's no reason for him to be looking at the clock and looking back and forth between that. That's just going to be one more thing to distract him.
Right, again, it comes back to the argument of the refs are there to look out for fighter safety and make sure the rules are enforced properly. So, but, I mean, Rory McDonald easily took the first two rounds from Carlos Condit, and then with about, I think it was right around 7 seconds or so, I think, looking at
4:53.
Looking at Sherdog's recap, they've got their official results. They've got it at 4:53 of the third round. Carlos Condit stopped Rory McDonald with TKO punches. And, again, it's one of those things you're like, oh, he almost made it. But Rory McDonald got his face rearranged.
He sure did. He got messed up really bad. And he should have been able to stop that match or, you know, finish off Condit in the first two rounds.
Yeah, I mean, Condit looked, he was getting taken down at will in the first two rounds. Rory McDonald was really putting on him. And then, I think Greg Jackson gave Condit the war speech in between rounds, between the second and third round, which I think was made note of in the broadcast. People like Rogan and Goldberg were like, I've never seen Greg Jackson that fired up. But they're talking about, you know, maybe that's what motivates Carlos Condit versus, like, the more reserved, analytical Greg Jackson we're used to seeing when he's talking to, like, a Rashad Evans or George St. Pierre. So, but no, and you mentioned it, Greg, that and I was thinking about right even before the fight was called off, you know, because Carlos Condit had clearly lost the first two rounds. Like, man, he's putting it on Rory McDonald so bad, they might give him a 10-8. And judges in general are pretty hesitant to give 10-8 rounds. But, I mean, honestly, had that fight gone the distance, I thought that would have been the right decision is have it scored a draw. Because Carlos Condit did get taken down. He did get hit a few times. But the amount of damage he inflicted on Rory McDonald, especially in that last round, was just really, really bad. And I think...
It's pretty amazing how much damage he was able to throw down those last, you know, several seconds. So.
Yeah, but I mean, Rory McDonald looked very impressive. I mean, you know, he lost, of course, but I mean,
he's got a long career.
Yeah, they were talking about how young he is and all that, and
20, right?
Yeah, so provided he stays healthy and no serious injuries, anything like that, he should be around for a while. And
George St. Pierre says he's the future of the welterweight division, which, you know, that's quite a compliment.
Right. I mean, considering what he was able to do to Carlos Condit before he lost, I mean, Condit's been around in the WEC and now the UFC for a while. He's an MMA, you know.
He's a grizzled veteran.
Veteran who's not that old himself.
Last week, it's like seeing how a WEC person would be going.
Right.
To,
yeah. And that's something that was brought up right on the broadcast. You know, he was, I believe, WEC champ, but he dominated WEC. And then, you know, when he came into UFC, much, much deeper waters, you know, much more resistance. You know, he had a harder time getting through his fights. So
yeah, every fight he's had in the UFC has been a hell of a fight.
Yeah,
they've all been fun to watch, though.
Yeah, exactly. And they got got fight of the night bonus. I was expecting maybe the Dunham Griffin fight before the card happened might have gotten fight of the night, but just the way it played out, there wasn't as much back and forth in that, not as much drama. It was kind of more of a Evan Dunham like, hey, look, this guy's really good.
Now, one thing on judging this fight kind of brings up is the old UFC versus Pride debate, where UFC, you know, they've got the round. You get one round, 10-9, one round, 10-9. You've pretty much won the fight if you win the first two rounds. You can lose a 10-8 round, which will make it a tie game, but other than that, you pretty much have to be stopped. As opposed to the way the Pride used to do things, where they just kind of judged the fight as a whole. They had the 1 10-minute round and then 2 5-minute rounds after that. But there was really no accountability in terms of, like, what you did at this point, at this point. You can hold the guy down for an entire 10 minutes and then an entire 5 minutes after that. But if you lose that last 5 minutes and you're losing it by getting your ass kicked, you know, you can end up losing the fight that way. So, you know, this is a fight that I think Carlos Condit could have won the decision under Pride rules, perhaps, even though under the UFC rules, it would have been impossible for him to do that.
Yeah, it's always interesting, and I am a fan of the 10-point must system, as long as it's implemented, you know, like, well. You know, if people use the 10-8s, you know, when necessary, you know, because people are really stingy on them. It seems judges seem to be really stingy on it, and this is something that, you know, it's kind of picked up steam over the last couple months just online. People really like being proponents of 10-8 rounds. And another thing, just to add on to that, you mentioned the totality of the fight, which I agree with. I think that's definitely an interesting way to score, and I think it is kind of more realistic. It's more of it's a difference between, like, winning a match versus winning a fight, you know? And I think they've said that before. I don't know if it's necessarily been UFC fights, but like, oh, this guy won the match, but the other guy clearly won the fight, that sort of thing. But if anything, you could also make the argument that it's you can use it to make an argument for five round fights for, you know, non-championship matches, you know, because it's the same kind of idea. You're like, had this fight gone on, or this guy was fading, this guy was coming on later in the fight. So it's just the idea that, you know, we'd see a different outcome if they had more time, or with the, you know, the Pride rules, if the fight was judged kind of like as a whole, as who inflicted more damage, not necessarily who won each round. But no, it's definitely an interesting debate for sure. And, you know, like I said, I like the 10-point must system, but I mean, the totality of the fight thing's not bad, and it certainly is. Sometimes it seems more, I guess, satisfying, because I've certainly watched plenty of MMA matches with friends who are like, oh, well, that guy really looks beat up, and you just got to go like, hey, just because you look beat up doesn't mean you lost, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, look how much damage that guy took. He lost the fight. I'm like, no, he didn't, because he won the first two rounds.
Yeah, yeah. One thing, I'm definitely going to have to agree with you. I like the 10-point must system. Because with the Pride system, it added way too much room for interpretation, because you could pretty much give it to whoever you wanted, look at the scoring criteria. But with the 10-point must, I think they should just kind of tweak it a little bit. You're talking about 10-8 rounds. I think 10-8 rounds should be a commonplace.
Right.
And then I think they should introduce the 10-7 round the way they currently use the 10-8 round. Because I think that you can get, you know, pinned for 10 minutes quite easily with nothing happening. It happens all the time. And then what if you come out and dominate that last round? You know, in my opinion, you've won the fight. But, you know, according to the rules now, it'd be a draw at best. And very likely, you'd only score a 10-9 round that last round.
Yeah.
But if you get a 10-8 round there, you'll at least tie the game up. And if you can swing a 10-7 round, which is, you know, would basically be the equivalent of what a 10-8 round is these days, you could actually win the fight, even though being just kind of positionally dominated but not necessarily having anything done to you throughout the fight.
Yeah, it's I don't know if this debate's going away anytime soon. I mean, who knows if they'll make changes or in the official rules or anything like that. But,
It seems like they would keep it the way they are.
Yeah, you know, I don't think they're going
to rock the boat pretty hard if anything changed now.
And it's not even necessarily a rule change is needed. Just people need to, like, again, start using the 10-8 rounds more. I mean, again, people have been trying to stir up interest on that online and on all different kinds of MMA websites. And
I think
and
the judges need monitors first. Like, there are several things that the judges need, you know, and they need to tweak the judging tools, you know, and then we'll get there.
The stuff we're talking about is purely fanboy arguments, much like the ring versus the cage.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not stuff that's actually going to change anytime soon. It's a reason for people to bitch and moan about stuff much.
And again, it's not like anything necessarily officially needs to be tweaked. You're like, judges should just start doing it, judges. Get on it.
Yeah, come on. Bring your own damn TV.
You can even do a 10-10 round if you must.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I mean, like, the TV is one thing, but, like, no rule changes have to be made to make judges score 10-8 rounds. They just need to start doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not a thing that, like, any commission needs to come up with. That's already in place. People just don't do it. So,
yeah.
We talked right at the beginning of the show, talking about Chuck Liddell not being able to take that punch from Rich Franklin. So, I mean, the fallout of this fight is, it sounds like, and we heard it before, but Chuck Liddell's probably done in the UFC.
Think he'll go over to Strikeforce?
Oh, I don't know. No, the UFC's going to keep him around. They're just not going to have him fight. He's going to be a spokesman.
Keep him undercocked.
He's going to be their sleeping spokesman or something like that. I mean,
Dana White and Chuck Liddell are friends. You know, they go back a long time since before either of them were famous. So I can't imagine Chuck going to another organization, even if it meant Dana having to give Chuck another fight to keep him, if it came down to it. Because, you know, imagine Chuck Liddell fighting in Strikeforce. That would be a huge boost for Strikeforce, for one. And then there'd be all the personal issues between them, which, you know, nobody's going to want to see. So I can't imagine that ever happening again. I don't think we'll see Chuck again fight, unless it's Tito. I could see Dana White giving him that one fight just because there's not a whole lot of danger of the knockout from Tito.
No.
But, you know, this is the third time that Dana White has told Chuck to retire. He told him after the Rashad Evans. He didn't say that one publicly, but apparently they've had kind of backroom talks about, you know, after the Rashad Evans fight, he told him to quit. And Chuck convinced him to give him the Shogun fight, which, you know, he got knocked out. But, hey, look at Shogun now. You know, that's not necessarily bad looking either.
Right.
And, I mean, both of those guys who knocked him out went on to win the championship. All three of the guys who have knocked him out up until this Rich Franklin one became the champion right afterwards. So, you know, that's not saying anything bad about the guys, but at the same time, you don't want to be getting your brain rattled around like that. Rich Franklin, on the other hand, you know, he's kind of in a position at this point in his career where, you know, you don't know if he's going up, going down, if he's on a plateau. He's been on kind of a rocky road lately, and seeing as how Chuck has been on such a big decline, this win doesn't really tell you too much about Rich Franklin. You know, you can't look at Rich Franklin wins by first round knockout and be like, oh, he's back.
Right.
Because it is Chuck. That said, kind of the way things go down certainly made Rich Franklin look good. You know, he had his arm broken.
Yeah, it does show us that Rich Franklin has huge balls.
Yeah.
And, apparently he broke his
And scored the knockout punch with his right hand, and he's a southpaw.
Yeah.
So, you know, while you can say things about Chuck Liddell's chin, at least he had the power to do that. You know, not a whole lot of people can throw a knockout punch with their left hand.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that at least says a little something. Dana White, even, you know, he does tend to blow a lot of smoke in terms of promoting stuff, but he says that he wants to consider Rich Franklin to be not necessarily, you know, the top guy, like, you know, Rashad Evans, Rampage, but he's in there now at 205.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's been making the rounds online, like, just, you know, what do you do with Rich Franklin after this? And, well, you know, once he heals, you know, we'll see. But I like the idea, and again, something that's been touted a lot online, is throw him in there with Forrest Griffin once he's all healed up. I think that's a nice fight for both of them, and, you know, it's one of those things where neither of those guys are a fight away from a title shot, clearly, but whoever wins that fight can then have one more fight against another top guy, and then they're in line for a title, you know?
Yeah, well, and that's also a fight that should do huge numbers.
Yeah.
Much like this fight would have a few years ago, and it still probably did pretty decent. I mean, I don't know what the pay-per-view buy numbers were, but, I mean, Forrest Griffin being the UFC Ultimate Fighter poster boy against Rich Franklin, who was the middleweight poster boy for a long time. Even though they've both kind of had a fall from grace in the last couple of years, I think it would still be a fight that a lot of people would want to see.
Yeah, most definitely. So that'd be interesting. I mean, we also, maybe Rich Franklin versus Little Nog could be interesting. Who knows? But hopefully Franklin does stay around at 205. They were asking, like, hey, are you going to do this or that? Are you going to go back down to, you know, middleweight? And while there are more interesting matchups for Franklin at middleweight now because, like, the division's just expanded, Anderson Silva is still the king of that mountain. And
well, for the time being, you know, who knows how long he's going to be there.
Right. We all know Chael Sonnen's going to out-wrestle him for five rounds and declare victory. And
well, yeah, Dana White
tweet about it.
Dana White doesn't want to give him any more fights, though, either. Who knows?
We'll see what happens. But yeah, I mean, I definitely like Rich Franklin, I think, more at light heavyweight at this point in his career. But yeah, who knows where he goes. And he is really not in a derogatory sense at all, but he really is a company man. I mean, lots of fighters do. They're like, oh, you know, whatever the UFC and the Fertitta brothers tell me. But, like, Franklin's always kind of been this go-to guy for, like, hey, so-and-so, like, got sick and is out of this fight, or, like, this guy, you know, Tito, most recent example, Tito's out of the fight, he's out of the coaching gig at the Ultimate Fighter, Rich Franklin, he's like their Batman, you know, the utility player, and so he's kind of the go-to guy for that, but hopefully they'll give him more steady, keep him in one spot.
Yeah. Well, he said that he wants to stick to 205, and, you know, he was happy enough doing the catch weights. Supposedly, he actually feels that 195 would, in theory, if that was a weight class, that would be ideal for him.
Yeah.
You know, he's a 205 fighter who can make 185, but making 185 is rough. Making 195 would be easier. That 205 is kind of small, but, you know, he's going to deal with it. And that's just the nature of weight classes.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter where you set the weight class. There's always going to be some guys in the middle, much kind of like Dan Henderson, where, you know, he's a small 205er, or is he a big 185 guy that, you know, is sometimes unimpressive because he has a hard time making the cut.
Yeah. Most definitely. Now,
Crow Cop?
Yeah, let's talk about Crow Cop finally returning to form, as it were.
Certainly his most impressive win in the UFC.
And a really heartwarming fight, you know, I would say.
There was hugging, there was fist bumps, there were smiles, it was great.
Which, you know, it's nice to see two guys, like, in a fight, seeming like they're having a good time with it, you know? Like, it's okay every once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, I know certainly it drives some people crazy, because, I mean, America Crow Cop choking out Pat Barry, but during the fight, you know, there's the, you know, smiling back and forth, giving the fist bump.
There's
and at
no
one point
smiling
they even,
and fighting.
Right, and even at one point, you know, they actually, you know, in the middle of the fight, just like, hey, hug, which was great. Because I'm sure it drove plenty of people crazy, but, like, the same thing it can be said on the
it
other
just
end.
It drove you crazy, Tobin.
No, I was fine with it,
actually. Drove you so not crazy that it drove you crazy right. That other people were driving crazy.
Right. Well, I just got to... It's a podcast. We got to drum up some controversy, right? But, well, no, because on the other end, the... And it's fighting, so it seems kind of silly to say, but the over-aggression bothers me sometimes. And again, it's fighting, so people are supposed to be aggressive. I get it. But I just hate the manufactured, like, I'm going to kill this guy. I'm like, you can't win an MMA fight by murder. So chill out with that stuff. And I know these guys, some people just really are getting that mental state where they're really angry and stuff. But a lot of guys, it seems, just really come across as manufacturing anger or drama to drum up interest in their fight. And that bothers me just as much as I'm sure, oh, look, these guys are happy and high-fiving in the middle of a fight does for some people. So
did Patrick Barry lose this fight on purpose? Of course not. But, I mean, did he, was he pulling back a little bit because he was fighting his hero because he was so obviously overwhelmed with emotion?
Honestly, I don't think it has anything to do with who he was fighting. There's actually an interview he did last week or the week before with Sherdog, and he's talked about he's done that before in fights. It's just like, I think it's just part of his personality. You know, he likes to fight, but he doesn't like to hurt people. Like he said, you know, like, hey, in middle fights, I've asked guys after I hit them, are you okay? Like, you know, he's not... He's into the competition aspect, it seems, not the, like, I want to brutalize people. Woo!
Well, if he's into the competition aspect, then he probably should have beaten Mirko Krokop.
Well, he did break his face, so at least he's got that. But at the same time, Pat Barry broke his hand and his foot, so...
A lot of injuries this...
During the fight, people weren't sure why Pat Barry, after knocking Krokop down twice with a right hand in the first round, he ended up switching to southpaw stance, but it turns out he did break his hand and foot, so that kind of necessitated why... Yeah, so, you know.
And we kind of saw this coming. I think last week we mentioned that Patrick Barry has nothing that Mirko Krokop doesn't. You know, they're kind of pretty
they're
evenly matched.
Yeah.
Yeah, except for Mirko obviously has a submission or two underneath his belt.
Everyone forgot about that, didn't they? Yeah, mm-hmm. And honestly, nothing taking away nothing from Mirko. That was not a good submission. It was a rear naked choke, and he got it in, and great, and Pat Barry tapped out to it. He didn't have his hooks in or anything.
No.
So I guess maybe that's more of a testament to Pat Barry just not having a good ground game at this point. But, I mean, it was just like Krokop was like kind of like halfway on his back. He's like, hey, I got your neck. Tap out. And it worked. So great for him. He got a submission of the night, which was pretty hilarious.
Nice.
Were there any other submissions?
There was the triangle choke by Mike Pyle and Jesse Lennox.
And I guess there was the Mac Danzig, Matt Wyman one, but not going to give him that one.
And a guillotine with
Claude Patrick and Ricardo Funch. So you can make the argument that some other people deserved it, but I think, and not necessarily defending Krokop getting submission of the night, but for looking at the rationale for it. I mean, when was the last time Krokop had a submission?
And
I think it's a rarity. Yeah, I think it's a rarity issue on this point. Like, whoa, Mirko Krokop got a submission. Also, he got on the mic afterwards and asked Dana White for it. So,
Dana White, really? Can I have the extra money, please?
Yeah,
Yeah, because I need it way more than these guys.
He was basically saying he got Joe Rogan gave him mic at one point, which is kind of awesome. But you know, Krokop said some stuff in Croatian, and then you know also said like, and I hope Dana White's not too stingy with submission of the night bonuses tonight. Hopefully, I'll get it. So if Dana White hadn't done that, he would have looked like a huge D-bag.
Sure, yeah,
so,
that's true.
Good thinking, Krokop.
Well, back to Patrick Barry. Seems like a good guy. You know, yep. Likes the sport of it. But he really needs to work on his game then, because the sport is already passed him by, you know, two laps already.
Before he even really got into it.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a striker to be feared of, you know, be someone to deal with. But yeah, I mean, if you don't have a solid ground game, I mean, again, he got choked out by Tim Haig. He was killing Tim Haig, too, before he got, I believe, guillotined. But yeah, I think he's just one of those guys who, you know, the comparison I could, and again, not direct comparison, but just, you know.
Look at Abbott.
I'm just going to throw it out there. Look at Damian Maia, a world-class jiu-jitsu guy who has yet to develop, you know, it's still a work in progress, a complete mixed martial arts game. And I think the same can be said for Pat Barry. Again, not at the same level. I mean, Damian Maia's jiu-jitsu is
amazing.
Super high level. Pat Barry's a good striker. Better than most.
No, we get it, yeah.
So, but, you know, he's still got to refine the other parts of his game before he can really be considered, you know, like a complete mixed martial arts fighter.
Well, I would also say Damian Maia's striking is quite more advanced than Pat Barry's submission defense at this point.
That's true. He did win a round against Anderson Silva.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, he beat up Dan Miller.
Yeah, this is true. So he's definitely, but again, it's just one of those things like, yeah, you know, you can't just be good
At one thing,
and coast on it for too long, unless you're a wrestler.
Yeah,
I guess is how I conclude that sentence.
And then even then, you're gonna have to defend the submission.
Yeah, exactly. So you got to figure it out at some point. But yeah, Pat Barry's fun to watch. He puts on entertaining fights, win or lose.
He puts on an entertaining pre-fight conference too.
Yeah, he's
anyone
a great personality.
No,
it was just the UFC pre-fight conference with you know, they have it before every UFC, and I just saw the clip of Pat Barry and Krokop being asked questions, and you know, Pat Barry's like, man, I want this guy's autograph. Man, if I just win this fight, I'm going to be looking out the window for 2 years. Like, man, I just beat up Krokop. He's just cracking a few jokes. And then Krokop actually, you know, got on the mic and he cracked a few jokes too, which was unusual for him.
Doesn't normally even talk to the media.
Yeah, he's usually super serious if he has anything to say. You know, the first question they asked him was like, are you going to give him your autograph? He's like, oh, absolutely. I'll give him as many autographs as he wants. I'm going to hook him up.
But it's nice to see, again, it's nice to see, like, you know, fighters actually acting as actual human beings and having, you know, that sense of camaraderie. And again, certain fighters just have grudges, blah, 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 blah. But it's just nice to see them be a little, I guess, have a bit of a fun time with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. So. I'm definitely cool with it.
Let's not freak out. It's not going to happen all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. There was some guy on Ultimate Fighter Season 8, I think it was. I don't even remember the guy's name because he kind of sucked and he lost a bunch. But he was just hugging everyone in the house. And he had a fight in the house where he was like, man, I'm going to hug this guy. That's the first thing I'm going to do. And the two guys went there and hugged and embraced for a good, like, 5 seconds before the fight. But then he kind of proceeded to get his ass kicked from then on. But it made for good television.
Yeah, well, and I always remember the Scott Smith and Pete Sell fight, I think it was, which ended spectacularly. But that was another one of those fights where they're like, oh, we just had an awesome punching exchange. High five. And it was one of those things where it kind of like, it's weird, but the same as like, oh, it's nice to know these guys are actually enjoying it and don't want to kill each other. So it is a nice reminder, again, that there's a little bit of humanity to be had in, you know, ultimate cage fighting death matches.
Well, you see that a fair amount after an exchange where they give each other a pound.
Right, yeah.
Kind of deal.
Good working. Martin Kampman?
This is, I'd be interested to see where Martin Kampman goes from here, coming off of his win over Paulo Thiago. This is another fight I was really excited for, and it was much more one-sided than I expected.
Yeah.
So I don't know why I'm on this podcast anymore, because I can't accurately project things.
It's okay, man. We don't need
psychic.
To. You just need to throw it out there, you know?
But, you know, part of it, I honestly forgot who I picked in this fight, but I'm pretty sure I did say Martin Kampman does have more crisp striking than Paulo Thiago, so I'll at least can hold on to that, because that was clearly evident in this fight. Paulo Thiago's got mad power in his hands, but you know, especially in this fight, you could really see he was just throwing the haymakers, the power shots, whereas Martin Cameron was just really, you know, he worked the jab a lot, but he was going for, you know, landing. It was quantity and quality, I guess you could say.
Paulo Thiago pretty much got outclassed, you
know,
which
even
is
on
something
the ground,
I did not see coming.
Right, even on the ground, where Paulo Thiago is a high-level jiu-jitsu practitioner guy, that sort of thing. And again, it was really surprising to see Martin Campman just being able to work him on the ground as well. You know, he had him in a couple tight submissions. None of them, nothing really ever came of those. Obviously, it went to a decision. But yeah, I was kind of surprised to see Paulo Thiago kind of outclassed on all levels in that fight.
Well, one thing I'd say for that is, you know, it's probably better to be a mid-high level guy on top than to be a high level guy on bottom. You know, top position is always superior in mixed martial arts. Even if they've got the guard, you know, I would rather be on top where you can throw the punches, you can do all this stuff. The likelihood of them slapping on a submission when you're on top is, you know, I mean, it's always a threat that's there, but it's not something that's really likely to happen if you've got good submission defense and are paying attention. And then as you advance position, I mean, it just gets better and better. And, you know, unless you're just a wrestler with, you know, not a whole lot of ideas of what you've got going on, it's always better to be on top.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of fun. I watched this fight with a few, or the whole card with a few friends. And one of my friends, he's kind of a casual fan, but, you know, he was really into UFC when it first started out, you know, like, hey, have you
Royce
heard,
Gracie days?
Yeah, have you heard of this Royce Gracie guy? That sort of thing. But we were watching this fight, and he basically was like, I don't understand. I thought Paulo Thiago was like a black belt in jiu-jitsu. I'm like, yes, but it's not 1995 anymore. Just because you're a black belt doesn't mean you can win when the fight goes to the ground immediately.
Yeah,
because
the other guy's probably a black belt, too.
Yeah, I mean, Martin Campman's got, I think, the phrase to keep using is like, oh, underrated ground game. And, you know, you just kind of forget when people like Martin Campman or even Paulo Thiago, these guys who have, you know, kind of made their names in their recent fights with kind of, you know, standing up and trading with guys, you forget, oh, yeah, these guys actually have well-rounded skills, are actually good on the ground, even if we haven't seen it for a while.
Yeah.
So, one thing I just saw, I think it was, first of all, again, it was one of those fights that I'd be interested in, you know, right afterwards. Like, what do you do with Martin Campman? He's not ready for a title shot yet, and even if he was, you have George St. Pierre and Koscheck doing the Ultimate Fighter, so it's going to be a while. But it sounds like there's some rumblings, maybe, Dan Hardy and Martin Campman.
Yeah, that's the word on the street is Dan Hardy is lobbying for that fight.
Which would be awesome. I'd love to see that fight. You know, obviously too soon to, like, make any predictions, but, I mean, those are two guys I'd like to see.
I'm going to go with Martin Campman by submission second round.
Yeah. 2:03 in the second round? Yeah.
It's never too early.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, earlier the better, so people forget.
Yeah. I've already made my predictions for UFC 150 main event.
RoboCop versus the alien from Alien Resurrection.
You guys joke, but you know that's going to be next year, right?
Yeah.
Not like some distant future. No, but no, that'd be a great fight. I think that's an interesting matchup. And on Dan Hardy's behalf, it's not another wrestler, which would be good for him. And not to say like the UFC needs to be like necessarily like, oh, well, this guy can't fight wrestlers. Let's not have him fight another wrestler for a while. But at the same time, you know, first of all, they're both in positions where this matchup makes sense. From a kind of like, you know, where are they on the welterweight, you know, like ladder. And furthermore, it's kind of one of those fights that, and I hate to say it, it's probably something that'll be like, you know, thrown out when if this fight comes together in the promos and stuff like that, a guaranteed crowd pleaser. But both these guys are kind of known for, you know, standing and trading, even if they're not like necessarily sloppy fighters and like, you know, like, oh, they're just going to throw haymakers, because I don't think that's going to happen. But they are both kind of more traditional stand-up fighters more often than not.
Yeah. Well, they definitely have that thing where, you know, Dan Hardy's on his way down from GSP after that fight, and Martin Campman's on his way up to GSP. But also, there's a little bit of a storyline to this one, because Martin Campman's last loss was to Paul Daly, who is Dan Hardy's teammate.
Yes, which always helps. Have that little, see if you can get a little feud going in there or not. But,
bum, bum.
I think it'll be fun. And that was a almost somewhat controversial stoppage in that Martin Campman didn't fall down.
Yeah, I would say it was pretty controversial. I mean, anytime you've got a knockout where the guy is still standing, you know, I'd say wait for him to fall down at least.
Yeah. But who knows? We're not refs. We're not in there. But yeah,
I wouldn't want to be.
Yeah. But no, that would definitely be a fun fight. Other than that, coming out of UFC 115, I guess other thoughts I had were just kind of like Ben Rothwell beat Gilbert Ivel, but it was not an impressive fight. That was one of the few fights on this card that was not that great. It was, I guess it was, there was a lot that happened in there, but it was kind of as a result of lack of, like, Ben Rothwell got Gilbert Ivel several times in full mount and lost position.
Yeah.
Which is like, I don't know if that's like, oh, Gilbert Ivel's just like a freak and he has like monster strength, or Ben Rothwell just couldn't hold position, but it just kind of looked bad after that first round. I mean, Ben Rothwell came out strong and, you know, was throwing flurries on Gilbert Ivel immediately in the first round. But after that, and I was talking about it with my friends, and Joe Rogan mentioned on the commentary, but he's like, this fight's going to get ugly if it goes past a couple rounds, you know.
The fight that we wanted was the fight that Ben tried for the first 10 seconds, you know.
Yeah. Doing the Vitor Belfort bum rush with both hands flying.
Which is like, I can't blame him for that, because Gilbert Ivel is a better striker than Ben Rothwell, so I think Ben Rothwell had the right idea, you know, like probably surprising Ivel with coming out that aggressively. And then after that, after he got caught a few times by Ivel, he's like, so takedown. Which he was able to get whenever he wanted, basically.
Yeah.
And then Ivel was just able to flip out of him or, you know, just roll
constantly. Yeah, got a few sweeps going on there.
Yeah, but who knows, maybe we can get that Ben Rothwell Crocop fight that was supposed to be in their Australia card that didn't come together because Rothwell was pretty sick. Maybe we'll get that now. And
although I think I'm a little less excited for that one after watching this, because Crocop looks much better than expected, and Rothwell looked worse than expected.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see, but I mean, they both came off with wins. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what you do with Crocop, and I really honestly, you know, don't know what to do with Rothwell at this point, but I wouldn't mind that matchup. But again, it's less exciting at this point. But yeah, I mean, because Crocop looked really good against a guy who wasn't going to take him down.
Yeah.
And who, and Matt, you mentioned before me, at least before the podcast, I think it was, talking about like, oh, and he actually threw some more of those high kicks that we haven't seen from him in a while.
Yeah.
And I think, again, that goes back to, because he was fighting a guy who wasn't going to take him down. So he didn't have the fear of like, oh, I can't throw my kick because I'll get taken down off my feet and something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was how he ended up on his back in the Gonzaga fight. Threw a body kick and got taken down. There are talks, though, about Crocop leaning towards retirement. He says he wants to finish his career in the UFC, but he's at a point now where his current contract is over. He has to do a new contract. And he was talking about how he's been fighting for 20 years. Obviously, mixed martial arts he's only been doing for like 9 or 10 years, but he's been kickboxing for a long time before that.
Mm-hmm.
And he just says he's not hungry like he used to be. He might just want to train other guys, you know. Yeah. Stay with the sport, but I don't think he has the eye of the tiger anymore. And especially, you know, if this could be his last fight, he goes out on a win.
Yeah.
He can ride off into the sunset like Tobin likes so much.
I know. Well, I mean, it's that or you walk off into the sunset being carried out by three trainers and a broken lip. So
yeah. So, I mean, if you're going to talk about timing, this is the time to do it.
I honestly thought, because, you know, when I was watching the post-fight interview with Joe Rogan, I mean, at one point Rogan just gave him the mic, you know, and I think that's, you know, a kind of a sign of respect. And like, because most of the time announcers are kind of like, no, give me...
Oh, especially Joe Rogan. You know, people try to grab it, you know, from him. He's like, no way!
No. Because, you know, like, this guy's going to, like, derail the interview, and he's not going to say anything useful. He's just going to start things like, hey, thanks, Condom Debo, for sponsoring me. But, you know, he gave it to Crocop, and Crocop started talking in Croatian, and I thought, you know, like, oh, he's going to retire right now, but he was just saying some other stuff. And it would have been a nice ride off into the sunset moment. But yeah, who knows? And I certainly, honestly, I don't have a problem with it. Because, Crocop looked good, but he's still not going to be challenging for the heavyweight title unless five other fighters get into a bush crash or something like that.
He would have to string together at least, you know. Yeah. And luckily he's in the heavyweight division where you don't have to string together nearly as many wins as you would in other divisions just because of the lack of depth. But even, you know, coming off this, he'd have to string together another two or three good wins over good guys before, you know, it would really be something to be talked about. Although, there is always the fact that, you know, how much do you want to factor in his name? He is a huge name. Sometimes they do springboard guys ahead just because of that factor. But, I mean, I think this would be the perfect time for him to call it quits. There's a lot of rumors of it. So, I mean, who knows? He might have another fight or two, but if I were him, I'd try to hang it up here.
Yeah, I'm just throwing it out there, not calling it for any time soon, but double retirement match, catchweight between Randy Couture and Crocop. Just let them two legends fight and then, you know, hold each other's hands up in victory afterwards and then bow out gracefully. And, again, not like it has to be anytime soon, but at some point, you know.
That would be nice.
Well, Randy Couture has already got engagements a couple months from now.
Yeah.
What's he doing?
Fighting James Toney.
He's going to be taking down and submitting James Toney.
Great. That'll be fun.
But everyone's going to watch it because there's that 1% chance that James Toney will punch Randy Couture directly in the face and knock him out.
Yeah.
So,
all right, good card. You know, bravo. Anything else you want to mention about it?
Well, no, not about that.
I think we need some new ring girls. I think I'm getting tired of it.
I really do like three. Three is a good number.
No, I mean the other ones.
I missed the tall one. we talked about it last week, the Strike Force card on Showtime this Wednesday during E3. And it's a good thing we talked about it last week because there's two more MMA events this weekend.
Oh, damn.
Right. And you know, there's still Bellator this Thursday, and then they're into the tournament finals, which are pretty exciting for people. But then on and that's Thursday. Then on Saturday, there is the Ultimate Fighter Live finale.
Oh, snap.
And is that on Saturday?
And then on Sunday, it's WEC 49 Varner versus Charles Roos.
Well, it's a good thing I don't care about Bellator, huh?
Yeah. It is a good thing, honestly, because it's like a lot of MMA. And
lot of MMA.
It's hard to keep up with. So,
and you know you've got the World Cup going on, so
yeah,
soccer.
Don't worry, I watch it on DVR. It takes like 20 minutes.
It's called football.
I just fast forward a lot until they stop and start running around in circles, and then I rewind to see what happened.
Well, at least both of these shows we got coming up are on free TV.
Exactly, and really fast. I know you don't care about Bellator, but Dan Hornbuckle versus Ben Askren in the welterweight final this Thursday. That should at least be a fun fight. Dan Hornbuckle's been very impressive in his last few fights. Definitely got to keep an eye out for in the welterweight division. And Ben Askren, world-class wrestler who is still developing his MMA skills. So it'll be interesting to see how he handles someone who's good on the ground, has good submissions, that sort of thing. Okay, back to stuff you guys care about.
All right, woo! So kick it with the we'll start with Strikeforce, or should we go on?
Oh, no, we already talked about Strikeforce last week.
Let's do Saturday then.
Yeah, let's talk about
Ultimate Fighter season finale.
Yeah, have you guys been watching The Ultimate Fighter?
You know, I watched the early episodes, and I tried to watch it, but my cable box died on me, and I had to go to GCI and be like, yo, my cable box doesn't work, and they gave me this new one. This new one doesn't have any buttons, so I gotta find my remote. So, long story short, no, I have not been watching it.
I've DVR'd all of them, and I haven't watched a single one.
sounds like it's time for a marathon. Yeah,
marathon at Matt's house.
Yeah, I mean, I was really not excited when the season started, and I think part of that was justified. But honestly, this season was a lot better than I expected at times. They focused more on the fights and the fighters as opposed to stupid house drama. But they did have one or two episodes where they got into stupid house drama, and it was ridiculous. And I was talking to my roommate, I'm like, see, this is why I usually hate this show, because they were yelling at each other literally for 10 minutes. About, you stole my shirt, you sprayed silly string on me, you threw something at me from a window.
You were blasting an air horn while I was trying to sleep.
Yeah, stuff like that. And I'm like,
Ed
this
kicked
is,
McGee, knock
these,
it off.
These are grown-ass men acting like 10-year-olds on national television. I'm like, just be impressive in your fights, and that should get it for you. You know, have a funny haircut and throw head kicks. That'll be good. You don't need to be a ridiculous human being.
So what are we looking at for the finals?
Oh, right. So
for those of us who haven't been paying attention.
Sorry, I was working in my aneurysm there.
No,
I apologize.
It's good.
The main event, Keith Jardine versus Matt Hamill.
I didn't even know Jardine still had a job.
He does. I think, you know, guys who are on the first couple seasons of The Ultimate Fighter and also have really catchy nicknames.
That's true.
And look like Vikings. Saying,
he's down three in a row, but,
yeah.
You know.
I like the fight between him and Matt Hamill. I think that's a good matchup, kind of see where each guy is at. Matt Hamill coming off that win over John Jones.
Yeah, that's what you want to call it.
So a good bounce back fight for both guys. We'll see. I know Matt Hamill probably doesn't subscribe to our podcast, but
he probably does.
Maybe consider throwing a left hand out there, because Keith Jardine cannot stop left hand.
You know he can't hear us, right?
That's why I didn't say I know Matt Hamill doesn't listen to this podcast. I edited myself and said subscribed, and then you had to bring it back there. So. Just throw a left hand out there is all I'm saying. Keith Jardine frequently falls victim to punches coming from people's left hands.
Oh, yeah.
But I know, it's an interesting fight. You know, if it hadn't been for Keith Jardine's track record recently, I might favor him in this fight. But I just don't know what he has. I think he's been exposed, that people know that, you know, you can catch him with those coming from the left. And, you know, if you really put it on him, you blitz him, then he doesn't have much to offer. He doesn't recover well. His awkward style is just awkward. It's not like some sort of secret weapon that he has where people are like, oh, what's that happening? It's not. It's just like he has a bad technique at times, and, you know, like he drops his hand sometimes when he throws kicks, and that's where he gets caught. And I don't know. I'll take Matt Hamill in this fight.
Yeah, I lean towards Matt Hamill too. Keith Jardine, even when he wins, usually wins by decision.
Unless your name's Forrest Griffin.
Yeah, well, he's got that knockout over Forrest Griffin, but Forrest Griffin's chin is also not, you know, the greatest out there. So that's not a huge accomplishment, being able to knock him out.
Yeah.
And, you know, Matt Hamill hits hard, and he can swarm you, which is, you know, the kryptonite for Keith Jardine. And as Ryan Bader proved in Jardine's last fight, it doesn't matter if you wait till the third round to swarm him. You can still swarm him, and it will be equally effective.
Yeah.
So I would imagine this is going to be Matt Hamill by finish at some point. It could be by decision, but I don't see Keith Jardine having much of a chance for victory here.
Yeah. By the way, I just got to say, it just seems really ridiculous now that Quentin Jackson took Keith Jardine to a decision.
He didn't swarm him. He even said in the post-fight conference, like, I meant to swarm him, and I didn't.
Yeah, because Keith Jardine has been way less competitive with fighters not as good as Quentin Jackson.
So. One punch doesn't put him away.
No.
You can hit him really hard once, and he'll be fine. You got to do a few more afterwards, and then he'll be sleeping for a half hour.
Yeah. Other than that, you know, we've got we'll talk about, you know, guys on this season of the Ultimate Fighter, but also some Ultimate Fighter alum, Chris the Crippler Lieben versus Aaron Simpson. Another guy who's, if he wasn't on the Ultimate Fighter, probably wouldn't have a job with the UFC, Chris Lieben. And Aaron Simpson, I think his last fight was that against
Tom Lawler.
That was a good fight. Yeah, the split decision win at UFC Fight Night 20. Yeah, that was a very, very entertaining fight. I believe Aaron Simpson, he's got a pretty solid wrestling background.
Lieben's not a bad wrestler either, though. He likes to throw bombs, but, you know, he can wrestle when he wants to.
He's one of those guys that'll surprise you, yeah. That's a good point. He's got a decent ground game and stuff. But, yeah, man, I really don't know. I'm just trying to think what Chris Lieben has to offer that Tom Lawler didn't, and maybe he punches harder.
Yeah, I was about to say, more power in his punches. And he's got... hell of a chin.
Yeah, he takes a hell of a shot, so I would imagine... You know, I am going to take Aaron Simpson in this, but I think it'll just be... if he takes it, it would be a decision, and just him being able to get takedowns and kind of control from there. But it definitely would not surprise me to see Chris Lieben punch him directly in the face a few times. And...
Well, since I'm on the fence, too, but you went with Aaron Simpson, I'm going with Lieben, because this is a fight that I see as being... You know, what does Chris Lieben bring to the table right now? Because he really hasn't gotten a whole lot of airtime lately.
He's fighting for that rematch with Anderson Silva.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, he got popped for steroids a few years back against Michael Bisping, and he took a long time off and has been on undercards since then.
Yeah.
Or at least his last fight was on the undercard. He might have had a pay-per-view fight before that one. I don't remember. But he hasn't really gotten much of a chance to show us anything in quite a while. And Aaron Simpson, you know, he had that good fight against Tom Lawler, but he also almost lost that fight against Tom Lawler, who's really not known for his stand-up. And Aaron Simpson is supposed to be known for his sprawl and brawl game.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm going to go with Lieben by knockout, because I think Lieben's got more power than Lawler. And if the fight plays out the same way as the Tom Lawler fight did, I see Lieben landing the knockout. That said, you know, it's very possible that Simpson is just going to go with more of a wrestling strategy. Maybe he's going to kind of rethink his sprawl and brawl tactics after that last fight.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. And since I appear to be giving fighters advice on how to win fights, a little advice for Chris Lieben. Not so much fighting, but please don't put your hair in cornrows again. It looks silly. I think he's done that in the last few fights. I'm not a fan, but who am I to say?
You don't like Bo Derek, do you?
Should I?
Oh, she was that really attractive female from the 80s. She had cornrows.
It's different if you're a girl.
You know, it's not. It's pretty ugly for them, too, I thought.
It depends, but sorry, I took us on the rabbit trail. But
I'm going to just say with the cornrows in mixed martial arts thing, it makes sense in terms of getting hair out of your face.
Yep.
I don't think Lieben's hair is long enough to warrant the cornrows, though. if you want to go with Evan Tanner, you know, 2005 when he won his title and he had, you know, hair down to his shoulders, like, all right, that's going to keep that stuff out of your face. I can see it. Or a lot of the women's mixed martial artists, they have the cornrows just because they've got, you know, long hair. And it makes sense. If you've got short hair that, you know, barely getting down to your eyebrows, don't do it.
Go on to Court McGee and Chris McCray.
That's the final.
Yeah, do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, the guy that's in recovery forever, you know.
I'm trying to remember.
I think I know from Court McGray is really just the story of him and his...
Woke up like a week later.
Yeah. It's like the craziest thing.
Yeah. And Chris McCray, I believe, has fought the most and also lost the most and is still in the finals here.
Well, they each lost once, didn't they?
Right, that's what I'm trying to remember, like, and I'm sure it's happened before, but this is a finals between two guys who have lost on the show.
Well, that has never happened. There's been finals where there's one person who lost before, but this is the first time that there's been two people.
Because this is the season they had the wild card thrown in, and there's some injuries.
And the wild card managed to go on and win the, at least, you know, make it that far.
Yeah, so it's kind of crazy, but...
So, yeah, this is the first time that there's been a guaranteed... loser to be the winner. And a little note about losers historically in the Ultimate Fighter is they've never gone anywhere after getting back in, with the exception of the Ultimate Fighter 9. There was an American, I think his name was Frank, so he's the guy who got his teeth knocked out by the guy who ended up winning, James Wilkes. And he lost in the first round, ended up getting back in because one of his own teammates had to pull out, and then he won a fight against the guy who quit after two rounds. They're going to do a third round, and the guy didn't want to answer the bell. But then he ended up fighting James Wilkes again and lost to him a second time. But that was the first time in the history of the Ultimate Fighter that somebody had lost and come back in and still actually won. Because usually people lose, they come back in, they just immediately lose again right away. Yeah. So this is pretty impressive where people have lost and then go on to beat people who are undefeated.
Yeah, and... you know, I've been watching the season on and off, but, you know, as far as what I've retained about what fighters have to offer, it's kind of hard to say. But Chris McCray, I mean, he's been impressive at times. A lot of times, you know, he wears down pretty fast, it seems. And, you know, he got beat up a lot in the season, and I know it's, you know, several months removed, I believe, since when they taped. So
yeah.
He's all healed up and stuff. But I don't know. I'll take Court McGee in this fight, but, again, it's kind of a toss-up for me, honestly.
Yeah, I've got really no thoughts on it. I don't remember who Chris is, just by the name. And then Court, I remember him because he had the crazy chops, right?
He's got
the Amish beard.
The beard, yeah.
He's got the hardcore
Amish
beard.
Kind of Amish beard, yeah. Hardcore.
Yeah, so I've got the visual of him, but then I didn't see his fight because of my cable box. So
right.
So yeah, I've got absolutely like no thoughts on this one.
Yeah. Other than that, veteran Spencer Fisher taking on Dennis Seaver. That should be a fun fight.
That should be good, yeah.
And then Rich, I'm going to mess up his last name, Atonito.
That sounds good.
Versus Jamie Yeager.
Headkick McGee.
Headkick McGee. It was really funny. I believe it was the final episode of the taped Ultimate Fighter shows. Basically, like three or four guys were like, please let me fight Jamie Yeager. And I don't know if Rich was actually one of them. But I think...
So he's one of the guys on the show?
Right, yeah, they're both I believe both from the show. Well, Yeager
that,
is clear.
That Rich name seems familiar to me.
This is bothering me now because I'm pretty sure it was someone from the show. But yeah, like, there's a couple other guys, Casey Oscola, I believe, and then...
Oh, yeah, well, I remember he was getting into it with Yeager.
Even Mint Chocolate Chip wanted a piece of them, it seemed like, and I think Hammer Tree as well.
Ooh, did Mint Chocolate get a fight in the finale?
I don't think so, no.
Oh, bummer.
I just totally spaced out his name. I feel bad.
Clayton something.
Yeah, Clayton McKinney. These guys are like, you know, grown-ass adults who have had, you know, years of trying to become MMA fighters, and we're like, yeah, Mint Chocolate Chip, whatever.
Hey, Gig McGee.
Yeah. So,
Well, that's what you get for doing that to your hair.
Yeah, exactly.
Punk.
But, I don't know, Jamie Yeager has not impressed me, honestly. He's a good personality, and he's got, you know, an impressive... He's an aggressive style, and he throws head kicks and flashy moves.
And he's got power.
Yeah, he's got power, but as shown in the fight that he lost on The Ultimate Fighter, you know, when you put it on him, and who knows if he got hurt or whatever else happened, but if you put it on him, you know, it really throws him off.
Yeah, apparently,
you know,
not a whole lot of heart.
Yeah, yeah. So, and his technique is pretty... From what I've seen, you know, like, oh yeah, he can throw a good head kick and stuff, but you know, he was getting caught with some good counters and stuff in his fight that he lost. And yeah, I could see him staying around for a little bit just because of the personality and, you know, the flashy style, but I don't know. He's really going to have to adjust his game if he wants to win the fight. I don't know. We'll see. So that's all the couple on the other card as well, but you know, those kind of the notable fights, you know, on the main card there. And you know, a couple other Ultimate Fighter guys from this season as well as previous seasons. James McSweeney on the prelim card.
Yeah, from last season.
Yeah, and James Hammertree from this season, and Chris Camozzi are fighting Josh Bryant.
Brad Tavares was on this season.
Yeah, Kyle Noak, Josh Bryant, Seth Brzezinski, totally messed up his last name, versus Tavares, John Gunderson, Mark Holst. And Travis Brown, as we mentioned, yeah, James McSweeney.
Now, the guy fighting Hammertree, he's the dude who didn't get a fight because his jaw was broken, I believe, right?
I think so, yeah. This is, just Google search them. See if a pitcher rings a bell.
Yeah, that's the guy.
Who is,
that's good. I was hoping he was going to get a fight.
Yeah, so always nice to see those guys who have those injuries get another shot. And I'm sure we'll see Nick Ring maybe get a shot at some point, but I think just the way his injury was, I mean, he had to have some serious knee surgery, it sounded like, so I don't think he's just had time to recover yet.
I'm kind of surprised they didn't give Clayton Mint Chocolate Chip a fight, because even though he lost, he was clearly injured. You know, they were talking about it before the fight. You know, how Tito didn't believe him and all that stuff, but you know, he was complaining about it, and then he ended up having surgery. So even though he lost, it's kind of got that little asterisk because he was clearly injured going into the fight.
Yeah. So you know, honestly, at this point, it wouldn't surprise me to see a few of these guys show up on some other prelim cards, that sort of thing. I mean, because really, I mean, the first couple seasons of The Ultimate Fighter, it was like, that was the draw. I was like, oh, the winner of this will get a contract with the UFC, guaranteed. And that's still the deal now, but so many of these guys from The Ultimate Fighter show up in some capacity in the UFC, win or lose at some point. And again, it's not guaranteed, but it just kind of takes away some of the magic. I don't know. But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me to see Clayton McKinney come back at some point and get an undercard fight, something like that. Same thing goes with Nick Ring, provided he wants to continue fighting. It sounds like, you know, kind of a series of knee issues he's had. So,
yeah, well, I mean, a lot more guys get the contract than was originally expected. Cause, I mean, I remember going into season one, not really knowing what was going to go down. And then towards the end, it's like, well, I guess Diego Sanchez, Forrest Griffin, and, oh, an extra guy, Stephen Bonner, they all have jobs. That's cool. And then it turns out the entire cast has a job, save, you know, one or two guys.
Yeah.
I kind of like the way the UFC has done it, though, where, you know, because, I mean, they give all these guys airtime. They build up all these names, and you might as well give them a shot if they're any good. So they have the finale. Let them duke it out. You win on the finale, you're safe, you know, kind of deal. Like, they'll keep all the semifinalists, probably. If you get far enough in the tournament, they tend to have pretty good immunity. But then if you're, you know, one of the early guys, you got to at least prove your worth somehow. So they always at least have to win that fight on the show.
Yeah. And then finally, I think that's kind of all my thoughts for the Ultimate Fighter finale. I don't know if you guys had anything else. But
off to WEC.
Yeah, and be honest, this one's really just flown under my radar. And I don't think, granted, again, I think I've just been caught up, you know, keeping busy with other things. But I think this has gone under the radar of a lot of people. And part of it is, I think WEC kind of, like, rightfully so, really stacked their pay-per-view. So there's not a lot of fighters left for them to throw into this card. The main event, Jamie Varner versus Kamal Shalarus, which could have title implications, you know, maybe match up, you know, I don't know if it's guaranteed or not, but, you know, maybe see the winner of that go against Ben Henderson. But, you know, other than that, and, you know, no offense to either fighter, but, like, even that's kind of like a hard sell for a main event.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy Varner is most known for losing to, you know, the two guys who fought in the championship in the last fight.
Yeah, he's got the loss to Benson Henderson. He has a win over Donald Cerrone, but it was pretty controversial because I believe he had a, I can't remember if it was an eye, it was an eye injury of some sort that they, you know, stopped the fight at that point. And then went to the judge's scorecards, and a lot of people thought, you know, like, oh, maybe he's being a little, like, you know, underhanded with it or whatever. But, you know, so he's got a – he's not a fan favorite at this point, you know, just for, you know, unjust or not. He's just not a big fan favorite, and he's coming off that loss to Ben Henderson. Kamal Shalarus, He's got, I think he's got a string of wins he's coming off of.
7-0-1.
And he's also got the awesome nickname of the Prince of Persia. So.
Oh, sweet.
That's
yeah, mark that, that awesome? As a movie.
It's okay.
What?
Nothing.
Did
go
you
on.
Have to, perhaps a hint of sarcasm in there?
Never.
Okay. I get the feeling me throwing out things like he's got the awesome nickname like the Prince of Persia is being taken seriously by some people, and I'm concerned about this. Because that's a horrible nickname. Just to be clear. I hate to be the guy who has to be like, I'm just joking. But,
unless, like, he is actually Persian royalty, which I find unlikely.
Right, right.
But if he is Persian royalty, then that's a badass nickname.
Right. If he literally is a prince, go for it. Or if he can turn back time with Sand Dagger.
Because he certainly doesn't look anything like Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal's not Persian. But, yeah, he's coming off a win. I think his latest win, Dave Jensen, at UFC 46, which was when Jamie Varner fought Ben Henderson back in January. But yeah, it's a 3-fight win streak. So certainly, you know, if he takes a win over Jamie Varner, I'd say you could, you know, arguably give him the shot at Benson Henderson. You know, I saw his last fight with Jansen, and it wasn't super impressive. I mean, he did get the win. I guess not necessarily say super impressive, but there were still some holes in his game. Like, his stand-up just wasn't there for me. But I guess, you know, Ben Henderson is more of a ground fighter, a wrestler himself. So I guess that wouldn't necessarily be a bad matchup.
Yeah.
But, you know, this fight with him and Jamie Varner, it's kind of tough to call. You know, Jamie Varner historically has been a stand-up fighter. Especially when he called out Ben Henderson for, you know, submitting him.
Yeah, like, I'm here to fight, not grapple.
Yeah, like a sissy or something would do, clearly. So I would imagine, you know, we're going to see more of that type of style here with Jamie Varner. Kind of want to keep it standing in solid roost, maybe working more of a ground game. But, oh, man, this really is a toss-up fight for me here on here. But, you know, just with the momentum solid roost has, I'd lean in his favor on this fight. I don't know.
I don't really know him, but I don't like Varner, so I'm going to go with Solaruz.
Yes. The fan perception influencing fight picks. Fair enough. And the rest of this card, honestly, I think part of it is we've talked for a long time on the podcast, and again, this has really flown under a lot of people's radar just with all the other the UFC stuff, the Strikeforce card this Wednesday, the finale of the UFC Ultimate Fighter on Saturday. This card, I think, you know, I don't predict... You know, it's going to get a lot of views. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, like you said, they really stacked their pay-per-view. And even the previous WC, WC 47, it had all their top 135 guys. So, I mean, this one has got, like, kind of a number one contender match for the second-rate 155 belt. So, not really a whole lot to be excited about.
Yeah, I mean, other fighters on the card, you know, Josh Grisby, LC Davis, Mark Hominick, Yves Jabrin, always get his name wrong. Chris Hordecki versus Ed Radcliffe, which that could be a fun fight. Hordecki needs to coming off a pretty brutal head kick loss to Anthony Njokuwani.
Was he the guy who got the toe to the eye with the head kick?
I don't know if it was directly toe to the eye, but he was running away for positional purposes in his defense. But you know, never turn your back to a fighter. Like if you need to run away to get space. Backpedal, sidestep, don't turn your back. And Njokuwani caught him with a head kick, but still managed to kick him in the face, which was pretty impressive. So a pretty brutal knockout of Chris Hordecki. So he's bouncing back. And Ed Radcliffe, I believe, coming off a loss to Donald Cerrone. So this could be a pretty interesting fight. See where these guys kind of rank in that division. But yeah, other than that, it's kind of a. I don't say light. You know, I say it's a light card. For name value, at least, the WC always seems to come together with, like, having some really fun fights, some really good fights.
Oh, yeah.
But as far as, like, you know, what WEC stars there are, most of them aren't on this card.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, not a lot sticks out there.
In terms of draw, there's not a whole lot, but in terms of watching fun fights for two hours, absolutely.
And it's free, so definitely check it out, just as far as, like, you know, who knows how much attention it's going to get this week, I guess is my thing. So.
Yeah, but, you know, a lot of times you can get some of the greatest fights from, you know, fighters you've never heard of, like the Korean Zombie.
Exactly. And you know, even this last UFC is a kind of good example of, you know, a card maybe that a lot of people weren't necessarily excited for based on who was on the card, but we've got some very solid fights out of it. Yeah. We'll definitely keep an eye out for WC.
One of the most
Sunday.
Exciting fight cards of the year, at least as far as the UFC is concerned.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a lot of fight cards we talked about, reviewed or previewed. Clearly, of course, though, the most important news this week is the announcement that Fedor and, Randy Couture will be on the cover of the EA MMA video game. So.
Yeah, because Randy Couture had already signed that contract to be on the EA game.
Yeah.
When he was holding out from the UFC back in 2008, before he had re-signed a new contract. And they threw him on the cover, which is a pretty bold statement of a current UFC fighter on their cover.
I mean, from a marketing standpoint, that's the right thing to do. First of all, Randy Couture is, a very well-known fighter. People know him from his UFC 10-year, as well as, he was the Scorpion King, too. Come on.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's definitely a big name, when it comes to MMA. And from the side point, you want to put Fedor, your number one fighter in your organization, I guess it's not the Strikeforce game, it's the EA game, but, Fedor's easily the best fighter they have in that game from a, ranking standpoint, that sort of thing. So you want to have him on the cover, and, the Fedor-Randy matchup, that was one of the reasons Randy had this whole issue with the UFC, was he wanted to fight Fedor, and he was having issues with his contract. And that was the rumored fight that, Affliction tried to hype it, and then it never came together. So I think, and who knows if we'll be like, oh, finally we get to see Fedor versus Randy is going to draw in, a casual fan. I think just Randy being on the cover might help out with some just like, hey, MMA, Randy Couture, I like that stuff.
Yeah, well, Randy is quite possibly the biggest name in America in that game, is, something that people have to realize.
Yep.
There's going to be a lot of Strikeforce guys, which... Strikeforce is coming along. They've got the CBS thing, which really is going to help them. But that's still pretty new. Randy Couture has been on Spike TV now since 2005.
Yeah, plus he does infomercials and everything. He's like, hey, that guy called me Princess at 2:30 in the morning. So, but, I mean, Fedor
I'm
certainly...
I'm going to kick his butt with Fedor now.
Yeah, exactly. and Fedor's certainly come a long ways in the U.S. as far as recognition goes. I mean, he did, 5 million people saw him on that CBS card. But, again, just... as far as long-term recognition goes, I don't think many people are as clearly as familiar with him. But I'm excited for the game. And the actual bigger news regarding the EA MMA game, which is this week's E3, the EA kind of upfronts or press conference talking about some of the stuff. They announced a release date as well. I believe it's coming out in October. And then the really cool thing with that is they announced some new online components for the EA MMA game.
Oh,
which,
snap.
Which basically involves hype mode and a viewer mode, where it sounds like there's going to be more access to watching other people fight. But they'll basically kind of put, sounds like they're going to put cards together from the online community of people playing EA MMA online, where, it'll be broadcast on, the EA website, not just over, Xbox Live or the PS3 network or whatever. But actually, so you can have people, be like, hey, I'm fighting on this card that the EA Sports is promoting on their website, so it's kind of adds to that sense of community, which I think is kind of fun.
It sounds fun, but at the same time, who would watch that? I couldn't imagine watching more than one or two fights ever.
Geeks will watch that, yeah. But no, it's definitely the same thing. The hardcore guys who rewatch their Call of Duty matches or Street Fighter matches, be like, oh, learn technique and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I guess they are out there.
Right, so I don't think it's going to be a big boost to be like, oh, this will bring more people in, but I think it's kind of more of an appeal to that hardcore community. And it could be kind of fun. I think it's referred to as the live broadcast feature. Let's see here. Yeah, you can, and the other thing is, compete for prizes as well in these cards that they put on.
Oh, that's cool.
So that could be fun.
That sounds exciting. That's cool.
Yeah, that's so that's kind of a neat aspect to the online.
I like the fight card thing, Hopefully I'll be able to check those out, you know.
And if you can talk a good trash game, maybe you'll get on there, It's not all about technique, apparently, is what they're saying. It's, I don't know if it's going to be posting YouTube videos to promote yourself. The fighter on the card. That sort of
that
thing.
Wind up being sad.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe Jason Mayhem Miller will get on there as a fighter and as a player. So, yeah. But the release date officially for the EA MMA game apparently is October 19th. So something to look forward to in the fall. Interesting, because the UFC game, I guess the new one, hasn't sold as well as predicted. It's still sold, several million copies, but just as far as estimates go. EA was
Were they estimating THQ. Higher or
yeah, THQ was estimating higher. based on sales from last year's game, I believe. And from what it turns out, it's not as high as they had hoped. I guess they did better pre-sale numbers this year around, but like the total amount of buys hasn't been as good. So interesting. I don't think it's necessarily could be attributed like as a failure at this point.
Maybe not a great word of mouth.
But
though.
Just kind of underwhelming, yeah. And I think that's the risk you run with the yearly sports franchises, and maybe people just didn't think that UFC had done enough to the changes had been enough between games or anything like that. But who knows? It's just kind of interesting notes. So it'll be intriguing to see how the EA MMAK game does without having UFC recognition, but also being something different. You know?
Yeah, well, I think there could be a number of factors that play into that. One is that this game that came out in 2009 was the first mixed martial arts game to come out in 5 years.
Yeah.
And those old games, I mean, we played that one. It was fun for the multiplayer, but those were some terrible games. So that was the first one that was promised to be, like, it was going to be a good game. And it was a good game. So I'm not surprised that it sold all kinds of crazy numbers. But, you know, they come out with essentially the same game, a few tweaks, a few new fighters here and there. It's basically the same game, and I don't see why they would expect to sell more. I would think, you know, going for the same amount of people would be kind of a victory.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they may have just over-predicted what they're going for there. But also, I mean, there's something to be said for the fact that when UFC Undisputed 2009 came out, there was no talk of competition.
Right.
It wasn't until that game sold really well that EA said, hey, we can do this too, kind of deal.
Well, that's what Dana White said. They definitely had been working on that game for a while, but it didn't become well known until afterwards.
Well, I hadn't heard about it.
Right.
But, you know, either way, when UFC 2009 came out, there was no competition on the horizon. And now there's competition on the horizon. You still got to wait 5 months, and for people who've got an extra $50, you know, it's like, oh, I'll just buy both, you know. I'll buy this one to hold me over until EA comes out with their game. But, you know, for those who can't afford to buy both, and, you know, they're going to make the choice, they're gonna hold out, you know. Maybe they'll find out that the EA game sucks, and they'll go buy UFC Undisputed later on. But I can see how the threat of competition could make the numbers not be as high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, other than that, I mean, there's plenty of other crazy stuff going on in the world of MMA online, but, I mean, that was about it for things I wanted to talk about. I don't know what else you guys saw, any weird stuff or anything like that. But really, video games and MMA, that's my week. So when I can get them together.
That's awesome, man. We're happy for you, you know? Listened to your other show last week, and you mentioned that you had another show. Didn't mention it by name, but that's okay.
I think I mentioned the website, though.
That's true, you did.
Yeah.
You did say MMATorch.com.
That's true. I am a local radio DJ as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
That's awesome. It's good. Well, we're happy for you when your favorite things come together to make one big old pot of awesome.
Yeah, it works out well.
And it's going to be the fights. Never mind. Go on to something else. Because I'm thinking about when we're recording this and when it's going to air, so, you know, why bother talking about it?
We're talking to you from the future or past, depending on when you listen to this,
This is years from now where when you're listening to it.
Yeah.
Thank you for making the society so much better.
Oh, one thing I did want to mention. The UFC has had to move its fight night that was scheduled to be in Utah to, I believe, San Diego is where they're holding it now. And the official reason given is... it sounds like poor ticket sales, that sort of thing, which has happened in the past, but it is kind of weird for, an event to be moved because of poor ticket sales. Traditionally, you know, lower ticket prices, give tickets away for free, have people show up. So it's kind of abnormal to see a fight moved, but this is going to be the UFC on Versus 2 card, I believe, for August 1st. And, I guess it was going to be the first event in Salt Lake City, I believe, in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the ramblings might be is like, well, did the and I hate to drop it, but like, did the Mormons have anything to do with this? Is part of the rumblings? Bloody Elbow has a bit on that, talking about like maybe there was some outside pressure from the Mormon community regarding, you know, MMA in the state. And who knows? That's really just kind of rumors at this point. But, again, it is also very bizarre to see a card moved out of a state because of ticket sales for the UFC. So
they'll get their hooks in there sooner or later. You know, the UFC's been really good about...
Just like New York, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, or not. Sorry.
Well, I can't imagine you
Thanks,
guys
Toby.
Really that
Sorry.
Important of a market anyway. I mean, say the speculation is true, which I'm not right. going to go into that, but say it's true and the Mormons be like, F you, UFC, you can't fight here. I
they
can't imagine.
Say F you. That's
well, they might say that. They might not say the real word.
Yes.
But, say that goes down. I can't imagine Dana White's going to really, push towards Utah. It just doesn't strike me as, an ultimate destination. Like a place like New York.
Right.
Massachusetts. These places that they've been, working hard to get into.
It's not a hotbed for MMA, per se.
Yeah. So... Bummer, Oh, well. Move on kind of deal.
They've been having trouble getting into Germany, too, expanding there.
That's all Vince McMahon's fault or something.
Is it?
We talked about this a while ago. Yeah, but not necessarily really.
What do you mean?
We talked about this literally last week's podcast. that the whole wrestling and Vince McMahon being worried about MMA biting into his overseas sales and him... maybe behind the scenes lobbying to get MMA.
You know what you should do, Greg? You should go back to last week's podcast and on the archives here at MMATorch.com.
That's true.
And go back and listen to that, huh?
See if it made sense then. Yeah.
COVID never makes sense.
I even had lunch and I was well hydrated today, but maybe it was the.
It's the weight cut, man.
Yeah,
you just
maybe
cut it out.
Still the weight cut, and I think I'm going to go up a weight class again. It didn't work between this week and last week. I'll try it again.
What's Caro saying?
Caro is saying, apparently, to Cage Potato, that, so I made some mistakes, but give me another chance.
Man, he just turned down a deal with Strikeforce.
Or maybe Strikeforce turned down a deal with him. Who knows? But, Caro Parisian... Who people were really hyped for a while. He had some good potential, but he had some...
In the middle of the decade, he was one of the top fighters at the UFC welterweight division. He earned a title shot with Matt Hughes. He never ended up getting it, but that was his, an injury, and then he lost a fight after that. But, for a long time, he was one of the top guys.
Yeah, and then, he had some well-noted, well-documented anxiety issues with some of his fights, but he has just really kind of been flaky in showing up for fights. And then, I think his last fight in the UFC ended up testing positive for some drugs afterwards.
Yeah, they weren't steroids, they were painkillers.
Right, and there's some weird, bizarre circumstances with that. He should get another chance somewhere, but he's got to prove, work your way up the circuit again. You can't just be like, hey, I'm back.
Yeah.
He
doesn't belong in the UFC, but the fact that he and Strikeforce got to the negotiating table, I think he should have basically just taken whatever Strikeforce was willing to give him at this point.
Right.
Because at this point, he doesn't really have a whole lot to, bring to the table in terms of bargaining, and Strikeforce does.
Yeah.
And Strikeforce could make a pretty big star out of him. He holds a win over Nick Diaz, who's Strikeforce's welterweight champion.
Yeah.
So, he could get right up there pretty quickly, I think. I don't necessarily think that he would win a rematch. I think he would lose it. I think Diaz is past him quite a bit. But, he could make a new name for himself in Strikeforce, but... I don't believe that he really earns a big payday right now, which is probably what he was looking for.
Right, but he's got to get a couple of fights under his belt on maybe a smaller promotion before he can really be counted on as to be reliable again. But that just really seems to be his problem is, flaking out, having these issues before and after fights. So.
Yeah, because he was supposed to fight at UFC 106 against Dustin Hazlett and pulled out, I think, the day before the weigh-in, so 2 days before the fight.
Yeah, so it was not good, and they had to cancel that fight, I believe, because that's not enough time to get another fighter in there. So that's bad news. Certainly if Caro Parisian has some issues, that's address those. But at the same time, 2 days' notice is pretty bad. I mean, taking money away from Dustin Hazlett at that point. So
you can even get injured 2 days before the fight, but don't just freak out 2 days before a fight.
Yeah. So, yep. It's we'll see. Who knows if he'll ever be back? I don't think he'll ever get back to the spot he was in, several years ago.
So.
But if he can put it all together, like mentally, and keep injury free, I think we could see him, you know, have some, still have more success in MMA, but I just don't know where it would be at this point.
I think he could keep his name around in terms of being somebody that's noteworthy, not just for, you know, being the war machine type, where he keeps his name around by being crazy.
Yes.
Yeah, he can keep his name around by winning some fights, but he's never going to be elite.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you guys wanted to hit on, or I'm out of words, so.
No, I'm satisfied.
I've got some words, but nothing really to say.
All right. Well, kind of came off the rails there, kind of at the middle end, and then we brought it back. So we'll end on a high note, I think.
Yeah.
Just like yeah. Oh man, I was about to say the same damn thing.
Yeah.
Damn you and your quick tongue.
Sorry.
All right. Well, thanks for hanging out with us. Yeah, you can download us on iTunes.
The internet.
The internet. Here at MMATorch.com as well. Thanks for joining us. The Audio Choke at Twitter and Facebook.com. Until next time.
I'm Greg Rowland.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
And I'm Matt Collins. Hear you then. Well, hear us.
Talk at you later.
Peace.
Catch you on the flip side. See you in the jet.
Later.
Also, from like a minute and a half ago, that's what she said.
Oh,
damn you, Tobin, and your quick tongue.
The Audio Choke.